The daf for today is Kuf Chav Tes. We'll start on Kuf Chav Ches Amid Beis. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Chaya. Chaya is the name for a Yoledes, a woman who's giving birth. Kol Zman Shekever Pasuach, as long as her womb is open. Then we have special halachas in terms of overriding the Shabbos. She is considered in a dangerous situation once she starts the birth process. And therefore, Bein Amra Tzrichani, Ubein Lo Amra Tzrichani, whether she says she needs a violation of the Shabbos or she doesn't, if the women around her who are taking care of her, they think that she needs Chil Shabbos, then Mechala Nelesa Shabbos will violate the Shabbos, override the Shabbos. Even though she didn't ask for it, we're going to take the initiative because she is in that state of danger. But Nistam HaKever, after she gives birth, then the halacha changes, and then Bein Omra, here we turn to Kuf Chav Tes Amid Aleph, Bein Omra Tzrichani, Bein Lo Omra Tzrichani, Ein Mechalin Oleas HaShabbos. And after the birth process is over, we'll see exactly at what point that, you know, when do we reach that point of Nistam HaKever. It could be after a 3-day period, maybe after a 7-day period, but whenever it is, once it's called Nistam HaKever, and she's more or less, to some extent, back to herself, then, even if she would say, I need something, we would not violate the Shabbos. So again, the details will come as we go through the sugya. Rav Ashi Masni Hocha. Now, everything that we've been saying until now is Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel. And the text as we have it is the text, the transmission of Rav Ashi. However, Marzutra Masni Hochi, Marzutra has a different version of this transmission of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel. Om Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel Chaya, again the same word which in Hebrew, spoken Hebrew, we call Yoledes, a woman who's giving birth, calls Man Shakever Pasuach, as long as she's in that state, which is somewhat biological, but it's also halachic, it's a halachic state, as far as overriding the Shabbos, in which she's called a Chaya, and that's called Kol Zman Shekever Pasuach, Bein Omra Tzrichani, Bein Omra Ein Tzrichani, Mechal and Olesa Shabbos. So this new version of Marzutra deviates from Rav Ashi's version, first and foremost, and then we'll see a second deviation, in the question of the status of a woman who has Kever Pasuach, and she says, Lo Tzricha, I don't need that you violate the Shabbos. And the attendants, the nursing staff, the midwife, they all think she needs to be Mechalas HaShabbos. So then Mechalas HaShabbos. This we didn't see in the original version as Rav Ashi had it, because there it said, Bein Shelo Amra Tzrichani. She didn't say that she needs Shabbos to be violated. But if she would have said, I don't need Shabbos to be violated, ki'ilu, I'm fine without it, then we would not violate the Shabbos, even though it's kever pasuch. That's according to Rav Ashi, the first version of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel. But in Marzutra's version, then even if she went out of her way and she said explicitly, ain't tzrichani, I don't need this desecration of the Shabbos, nevertheless, we will override the Shabbos on her behalf. That's point number one. Point number two, where Marzutra deviates from the first version, that of Rav Ashi, is Nistam HaKever. Once we pass that point of Kever Pasuach, which again might be 3 days, 7 days, we'll see, then Omra Tzrichani, if she says that I need something that would violate the Shabbos, Mechalin Oles HaShabbos. Whereas in the first version of Ashi, once it was Nistam HaKever, even though she says she needs some sort of violation of the Shabbos, we don't listen to her. But according to Marzutra's version of Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmuel, we will override the Shabbos in a case where Nistam HaKever and she says, Tzrichani, I need the Shabbos to be violated. fine. But lo amra tzrichani, if she doesn't require it because she claims she could do without it and it's already nistam hakever, ein mechalin elasa Shabbos, we don't desecrate the Shabbos. Amalei Ravina limaremar, marzutra masni lekula, ravashi masni lechumra. We have these two versions of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel. Marzutra's version is lekula in two ways. Let's just go over this one more time. If it's kever pasuach, then we will violate the Shabbos even if she says she doesn't need it. And if it's kever sasum, if she says she needs it, we will violate the Shabbos. Those are the two major kulas of Marzutra in contrast with Ravashi, who would be machmir in both situations. Ravashi would say, in a case of kever pasuach, when she says she doesn't need it, we will not violate the Shabbos. If it's kever sasum, then even if she claims she needs a violation of Shabbos, we will not override the Shabbos. And Hilchas HaKeman. Now Ravina is very curious. How do we pass? I mean, these are very fundamental, far-reaching issues. And we have a controversy in terms of violating the Shabbos. It's nothing to joke about. Amalei Halacha Kamar Zutra. And why will we be Mekel? Because we have a principle called Safek Nefashis Lahakel. Whenever there's a possibility that we might lose a life, no matter how remote statistically that possibility is, we will override the Shabbos. That's called Safek Nefashos Lahakel. Now we get to the main question. You've distinguished between these two periods of time. There's something called Kever Pasuach. Me'emasai Psichas HaKever. What kicks off the beginning of her status as Kever Pasuach, which means that she has a full-fledged status of a chaya, of a yoledes, such that we will violate the Shabbos on her behalf, as Marzutra says, even if she claims she doesn't need the violation of the Shabbos. Omer Abaye Mishosh Eteshev Al Mashbir. The first of three opinions is that of Abaye, and it's when she sits on the birth stool. She's already in the process of having contractions, they have her ready for birth, everything is ready. She has the status of a chaya, of a yoledes, will violate the Shabbos once the ladies think that's what she needs, even if she denies that she needs it. Rav Huna Breid, Rav Yeshua Amar, Mishosh Adam Shoseis V'yored, from the moment that her bleeding starts as part of the birth process, V'yamrilei, according to a third opinion, Mishosh Echavrusea Nosos Oso Bakapeha. She can no longer stand and walk on her own two feet. The attendants have to carry her in. So that's going to kick off the period of time called Psichas HaKever. Now the Gemara wants to know, when does that period of time, her status as a Chaya to override the Shabbos, when does it terminate? Ad Masai Psichas HaKever. Omer Abaye. Abaye's opinion is Shlosha Yomim. For the first 3 days after birth, she has the status of a Chaya. We will override the Shabbos, even if she says she doesn't need it, but we think she needs it. Rav Amar, Mishmei de Rabbi Yehuda, Shiva, 7 days. V'amrilei Shloshim. There's a third opinion that puts a woman into the status of a chaya, which means that she is in a pikuach nefesh situation for a full month, which would mean that we'll violate the Shabbos on her behalf whenever we think it's necessary. However, the Gemara now is going to analyze and dissect these three periods of time: 3 days, 7 days, and 30 days. Amri Nardoi, the Chachamim in Nardoi, say the following: Chaya, the full-fledged status of a woman as a chaya, with all the implications that we had before about violating the Shabbos, Shlosha Yom, that's 3 days. Then there's a second period of time called Shiva, which the Gemara is going to explain, and Shloshim, 30 days. Let's go through these three periods of time. Shlosha. For the first 3 days after her birth, then Bein Omra Tzrichani, Bein Omra Lo Tzrichani, and this reflects Marzutra's version of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, which we accepted la halacha, that even if she says she doesn't need violation of the Shabbos, we think that we have to override the Shabbos, Mechalanas a Shabbos. Those are the 3 days, and that's called Kever Pasuach. Shiva. Now we get to the period of time from day 4 until day 7. Amra Tzrichani. If she says, I need whatever I need, you know, turn on the lights, turn on the heat, I need violation of the Shabbos, Mechalanas a Shabbos. But Amra Lo Tzrichani. If she says, I don't need it, is then Ein Mechalan Oles a Shabbos. And this reflects the Shita again of Marzucha Lekula in the period of time called Nistama Kever, which now we're identifying from day 4 to day 7, and we still will violate the Shabbos during that period of time to complete that week, even though it's Nistama Kever, in a case where she says she needs it. Again, if it's the first 3 days, even if she says she doesn't need it, we'll violate the Shabbos. But here, it depends what she says. If she says, Tzrichani, we'll override the Shabbos. Lo Tzrichani, we won't. Now we get to the period from day 8 until day 30. And that's called Shloshim. It's Afilu Omer Tzrichani Ein Mechalan Eles HaShabbos. Even if she claims she needs something very badly, we don't override the Shabbos. But she still has the status of Yoledes. In what context? Aval Osim Al Yedea Ramai. What this means is that her status is equal to that of a Chole She'ein Bo Sakana. In a Chole She'ein Bo Sakana, we will violate only Durabanans, only rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbos. For example, to tell a guy to do a malach on your behalf, which is called Amir Li Akum, this we will override for the sake of a chola. Chola is someone who's sick, he's got fever, he's in bed, he can't walk on 2 feet. And in her case, for 30 days after her birth, she is called a chola she'ein bo sakana, and we will do malacha through the agency of a goy. One of the issues in the poskim is, can we do a malacha derabanan on her behalf? And poskim will say for a chola she'ein bo sakana, we will override the Shabbos with the Drabbanan, but only with a Shinui. We'll have to violate the Drabbanan, but do it in a very atypical way. The Gemara goes on to speak about Shloshim by telling us, Kidravi Ula, Bered Ravi Loi, Diomar, Kol Tzarchei Chola, Nasim Al Yedei Arami B'Shabbos, any Chola She'ein Bo Sakana, his life is not in jeopardy, we will have the Malacha done by a guy. And this halacha that in Chol Shem Bo Sakana we will tell the guy to violate the Shabbos, that also applies to a chaya, to a yoledes within the 30-day period, meaning after day 7 till day 30. Amar Rabbi Yudam Shmuel, lechaya shloshim yom. A yoledes continues to have that status of a chola, that she's not well, for 30 days. By the way, in Yiddish it's called a kimpeturin. I don't know if that's a Yiddish word, it probably comes from some other language. Anyway, l'may hilchasamer, nardoy l'tvila. Now, narda has a new twist on Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel. Why? Because this particular version of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel only speaks about shloshim yom. Until now, we discussed Kever Pasuach, Kever Sosum, now we have Kol Shloshim Yom. So Nardoi was very confused. What is this second statement of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel? It's the same transmission, Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Meshmuel, but no distinction between Kever Pasuach, Kever Sosum. He's only talking about 30 days. Litvila. Litvila means that we're not going to encourage her to go into a mikveh, because they didn't have the mikvahs that we have today that are so sophisticated, they're luxurious, they're heated, and we're afraid that she might get a cold. She might catch a cold. And this is very dangerous for 30 days after birth. But Omar Rava Lo Amaran El She'ein Baila Ima. It only applies when she's separated from her husband. For whatever reason, her husband is abroad. However, Avalin Baila Ima, if her husband is available and it's within 30 days, then Baila Mechamama. Then when she comes out of the mikvah, her husband will warm her up. Chazal understood that body temperature is very much affected by two bodies together in an intimate relationship. And when the husband has that intimacy with his wife, we don't have to worry so much about the cold. Ki hada barte de Rav Chisda, the daughter of Chisda, that's the wife of Rava. Rava was the son-in-law to Rav Chisda. She tovla begotal sin yomin. She went into the mikvah within 30 days after giving birth. Shalob ifnei baila. And Rava was not around. Vitzteninas. And she became very cold. V'amti li'arsa basrei de Rava lefumpedisa. They took her physically in her bed and carried her to Pumpedisa, a different part of Bavel where Rava was. And this was also that Rava would have an intimacy with her, and that cured her from the coldness. Om Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, another statement of Rabbi Yehuda Nei Mishmuel, Osim Medura Lechaya B'Shabbos. Okay, we're talking about a woman who gave birth, and she has the status of a Chaya, and she is in a danger of catching a cold, and therefore we will turn on the fire for her on Shabbos. Sovramina, when the Amoraim heard this transmission, they thought, L'chaya in L'cholelo. We're only talking about a Chaya Yoledes. She's on a special status, her life is in danger, and therefore we'll violate the Shabbos and turn on the fire for her. But another chole, another person who's ill, right now, he might be cold, but we don't assume that he's going to die from it. It's not a life-threatening situation. We won't override the Shabbos. And the Gemara further limited even the case of a chaya in the Hava Mina. The Gemara is going to reject this. B'imos ha-gshamim in, b'imos ha-chama lo. Their text seems to have read that this is only during the winter months when it's cold and you could really... she can really get in danger. She catches a cold, but not during the summer months when the weather is hot. Now we have one girsa which is questionable, but it doesn't matter really because Rabbi Chiya, after this questionable girsa, he's going to repeat what it says in that parentheses. In the parentheses, it says Velohi. The Gemara rejects this understanding of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel. It's not correct. Loshna Chaya, Loshna Chola, Loshna Bimos Hakshom, Loshna Bimos Hachama. Whether it's during the winter months or the summer months, and it doesn't matter whether it's a woman who gave birth or any chola who catches a cold, it's very dangerous. And we can heat up, if need be, whatever the fire in order to stave off this coldness. Om Rav Chiya bar Oven, Om Shmuel, Hikiz Dam. And one of the occasions for a chola is someone who bloodlets. And it's Tanin, and all of a sudden he gets very cold after they took out his blood. And Osim Lo Madura, we will violate the Shabbos, and we will heat up the fireplace, Afil Bit Kufas Tammuz, even in the hottest month of the year, in the Tammuz period of time. And how much more so, any other Chole, we will set up this fire for him on Shabbos, even during the summer months, because there's a chashash that you might come to Sakon. Now, once again, Rabbi Osai, just a comment here, if we would go into the poskim, there are two categories. There's somebody who's a chola sheyesh bo sakana, and then there's a chola who, if we don't violate the Shabbos, might possibly become a chola sheyesh bo sakana. And in the latter case, although we will ultimately violate the Shabbos, but we do it in a more limited way. And some, there's some Rambams that you have to know here, etc. Now the Gemara tells us a story about Shmuel with regard to bloodletting, hakosas dam, and how important it is to be warm and not expose yourself to any cold air after hakosas dam. Shmuel, after he did his bloodletting, they took the blood out of his body, then he commanded his attendants, Tzolchule Taktaka de Shaga, chop up a very expensive piece of wooden furniture and throw it into the fire. in order that immediately I should become warm from the fire, because I feel cold after the bloodletting. And a similar story we have with Rabbi Yehuda, after he was subject to Kozes Dam, Tzolchule Psora Diyavna, another kind of very expensive table that was made out of a special cedar tree, very expensive, and they were in an urgent situation, they didn't have access, so they weren't going to run around now to find other wood for the fire. They chopped it up, and they put it into the fire. This is all to indicate how urgent it is. L'rabba Tzolchule Sharshifa. Right, they took an entire bench, like a couch, and it was made of wood, and they chopped it up into small pieces. That's what he commanded, in order to throw it into the fire after Hakazas Adam. So Amalei Abai L'Rabba, I don't understand. It's not such a simple matter, Al Pi Halacha, to take a very expensive piece of furniture and chop it up and throw it into the fire. He speaks him in third person because Rabba was his Rebbe. Aren't you in violation of Mishum Bal Tashchis? Right, the Torah says in Dvarim Perek Chaf that when we lay siege to a city within the context of a military campaign, then we're not allowed to destroy any tree unless there's a very great need to do so. Amalei, so that's exactly Rabba's answer to Abaye, Bal Tashchis de Gufay Adifli. The baltashes of destroying my body, my life, wherein I might suffer a danger, that's even more important than the danger and the waste of a very expensive piece of furniture. And all these Gemaras that we're about to learn are about Hakozas Dam, and we're going to start with, again, a continuation of the element of danger which is involved in the case of catching a cold after they let out your blood. Yimkar Adam es Koros Beso. A person should sell the house that he lives in, v'yikach min olim l'raglov, to make sure that he has shoes on his feet. And we can understand this on a moral, psychological level, meaning that there's a tremendous humiliation for someone who goes barefoot, so don't go barefoot. Ehikiz dam v'ein lo mayochal yimkor min olav baraglov v'yaspik b'em tzorche suda. It's critical that after Hakozas Adam, that a person should eat a meal. The body becomes very weak. And as important it is to have a pair of shoes, he would sell his house for a pair of shoes, but nevertheless he'll sell his shoes if he needs to in order to buy food to eat after Hakozas Dam. Mai tzorchei suda, and what kind of a meal should he buy? Rav Amar Basar. Rav says that the best thing as an antidote for the weakness of caused by Hakozas Dam is basar, eat meat. And Shmuel Amar, yayin, drink wine. And both of them have a sort of symbolic explanation. Rav Amar Basar, Rav wants you to eat meat. Why? Nafsha chalef nafsha. One nefesh, one vital living creature will replace another. Meaning, they've taken out your blood. Hadamu ha nefesh. The blood is your nefesh. It's your vitality. And now they have to replace it with another nefesh. The nefesh of an animal. So you have to eat basar. And Shmuel Amar Yayin. Why? Because Sumka Chalef Sumka. The wine is red, and symbolically, since they took your red blood and they extracted it, now you have to replace that blood by drinking wine. So I don't know, today if you go to Mada and you want to donate blood, I don't know if they give you any meat to eat afterwards or any wine to drink. I don't think so, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But according to the Gemara, it's either Shmuel or Rav. You know, take your choice. You either drink some wine or you eat meat. Okay, now the Gemara goes ahead and tells us different customs of various greats and giants in terms of the seuda they ate after the Hakozas Adam. Shmuel, biyoma di Ovid Milson, the day that he did Hakozas Adam, avdile tavshila ditchale. They made him a tavshil out of spleen. The spleen apparently is very healthy to re-energize the body. Rabbi Yochanan, in the case of Rabbi Yochanan, on his day of Hakozas Dam, shasi Adinofik tiya mi une. He drank enough wine until you could actually smell the fragrance of the wine coming out of his nostrils. That's how much wine he drank. Rav Nachman Shossi Adikofi Tchole. He said that he would drink so much wine that his spleen was floating in wine. Rav Yosef Shossi Adinofak Mi Rivda de Kusilta. He drank so much wine to the point in which it says here, Sheyotza Yayin Manakovim Shenasu Bibasoro. He had some pores on his skin, and the wine was somehow coming out of the pores of his skin. Rava Mahadra Chamra Bartlosa Tarfi. And Rava after Kozistam would look for a vintage wine that was at least 3 years old. Omar Lehu Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Rabbanon. Rav Nachman commands his students, B'matuna minaychu, please do me a favor, B'yomad HaKozah, on the day of HaKozistam, Imru Beisaychu, tell your wives that they should prepare a big Suda, as if Rav Nachman Ikol Gabon, as if I was coming to visit you. So certainly, the Kolel wife, who's being visited now by the Rosh Kolel, her husband would expect her to make a real Henry VIII banquet. The Kulo Arume Asire. The Gemara now wants to say that for the purpose of drinking wine after Akozas Adam, you're allowed to do a subterfuge, a harama. What kind of subterfuge? So he says the following, Kule Arume Asire, Barme Hai Arume Deshari. In other words, in this following case, we're going to allow it. What's that? Mandi Ovid Milsa, he was subject to Akozas Adam, Velo Efshale, and he didn't have a possibility of purchasing wine, which is so critical, it's urgent, is Lishkol Zuza Mocha, he should take inferior coins, whose value is very limited, because most people would not use it and accept it as currency. And perhaps we're talking about coins that would normally be taken out of circulation, for Lazel Leshev Chanusa, and he should go to seven different stores, and he's allowed to fool them and make believe that he's drinking wine, and they would give him a little taste of wine in order to see whether he's happy with the wine, so hopefully he'll buy it. But this person doesn't have money to buy wine, so he knows he's not going to buy the wine. So this would normally be a violation of Onos Dvarim, you know, to go into a store and have them, give you wine. I mean, if you tell them I'm not buying and they want to give you a taste of wine, that's something different. And this person, after Akozas Dam, he's going to taste the wine add the time shiur rivyasa, and then he can get to the point where, as a result of going to these seven different stores, he's going to drink a full rivyas of yayin. And again, under normal circumstances, such a thing would be prohibited. But here, he's in an urgent situation; he has to drink wine. It's so important. So let me just read you a summary of what we just learned. He says the following, that deception is always forbidden, except for the following deception, which is permissible to preserve one's health. One who undergoes the procedure of bloodletting, and it's not possible for him to buy wine for lack of funds, he should take a worn-out zuz, which is no longer acceptable as currency. He should go to seven wine shops, sample the wine, till he has sipped the volume of revius of wine. Ve'i lo, and apparently, to employ this deception, you know, the wine seller says, do you have any money? So he deceives him and he says, look at these coins, but he doesn't show it to him carefully, is lechol shev tamri uchmosa. He should even eat seven black dates, velishuv mishcha b'tzide, and he should rub oil into his temples, v'nigru b'shimsha, and he should sleep in the sun. And apparently, this is a substitute for drinking wine. He definitely desperately needs to warm up his body. He doesn't have this one-off, one-out coin that's out of circulation in order to deceive the wine sellers. So what he can do is, he's got to eat 7 black dates, he has to rub oil into his temple, he has to sleep in the sun. All this is going to heat up his body because he's in a very dangerous situation. Avlet, a certain rabbi by the name of Avlet, Ashkechei L'Shmuel, he found Shmuel Degani B'Shimsha. And Shmuel was sleeping in the sun. Oh, I'm sorry, Avlet is a non-Jew, just one second. Oh yeah, he was an astrologer, a non-Jew. Amalei, he says, Chachima de Yudah, you're the wise men of the Jews, Bisha Miavitova. In other words, you're exposing yourself to the sun. We know that too much sun exposure could be very dangerous to the skin, cause skin cancer, Rachman Otzlan. And how could you hope that that you're going to get some good out of something that's bad? Omalei, Yom HaKazahu. It's the day of my bloodletting. And for me, sleeping in the sun to warm up my body is absolutely urgent. Velohi, the Gemara denies that Shmuel had undergone bloodletting on this day. Ela ika yoma demali be shimsha bechule shata. There's one day in the entire year that exposure in the sun is beneficial. And that's yoma denofle be tkufas tamus. That's the day in which Tammuz, the summer solstice, falls. V'savrlo Galilee. And Shmuel didn't want to reveal to this astrologer how significant that one day of the year is, which is the beginning of the summer solstice, and that day, sleeping in the sun, getting the sun, is very healthy. So I have a feeling that this astrologer was not necessarily a great friend of Rabbi Yochanan, of Shmuel, sorry. Hekiel beruach taima shal. Okay, that's a mnemonic device. Rav Shmuel diamei shavayu kol hamekiel besudas hakozes dam mekiel lo mizonosav min hashamayim. A person should not be laid back about this critical meal that he eats after bloodletting. And if he does so, then the heavenly court will be very laid back about supplying him with his needs, because he has endangered his own life. V'omrim hu al chayav v'lo chos anai achus olav. They say in the heavenly courts, he's not concerned about his life. We should be concerned about him. Rav Shmuel di'ami chavayu hayman di'ovid milsa. Someone who undergoes bloodletting, lo leisev hecha de'korach zika. He should not sin where the wind swirls. Once again, he might catch a cold. And therefore, dilma shafi le'umna. And the bloodletter might have drained him of too much blood. We don't know if the bloodletter knew exactly how much blood to take from his body. Umukim le arvi asa. And it could be that so much blood may have been taken out of his body that he's very dangerous. You know, he's at the bare minimum of a revius of blood, so to speak. Vi asi zekav shoef mine. And the wind might come and it might even draw more blood from Osi de Sakon. It's a very life-threatening situation. Shmuel, Havi Rogil, Vi Ovad Milsa Bebesa Deshav, Levene Varicha. Shmuel used to undergo bloodletting in a house made of walls that had bricks that were 7.5 bricks thick. In order to make sure that this house was warm and was insulated from chilling, and he wouldn't catch a cold after bloodletting. Yom Achada Oviv Yargash Benafshe. On one particular day after he underwent bloodletting, he felt a weakness. Bodak v'chasar chad aricha. He examined the walls of the house and he found that 1/2 of a brick of the wall that was usually 7.5 bricks thick was missing. Rav Shmuel Diami Chavayu Haiman Di Ovid Milsa, one who undergoes bloodletting, Lito Midi Vahada Lepuk, he should eat something first before he leaves the house. Dilo Toim Midi, if he doesn't taste anything, Ipoga Vishchava Yarka Ape, he may meet up with a corpse, his face will turn green, and he can die. Chas Shom Ipoga Beman De Katal Nafshi, if he encounters a murderer, miss, he will die. Ipoga. Here we're turning to Kufchav Tesom and Beis. B'dovar Acher, if he encounters a pig, Kosha L'dovar Acher. In other words, it might cause him leprosy. All this is because he's very sensitive and very weak after bloodletting. Rav Shmuel D'Ami Chavayu, Haiman D'Yavid Milsa, if he had bloodletting, Lishe Purta V'Hadar Lekum. He shouldn't get up and walk around immediately after they took his blood. He should take his time and be relaxed for a little bit. The Omar Mar, Chamisha Dvar Krovim Lemisa Yosef Menachayim. There are five situations in which a person, if he runs immediately and stands up without resting, he could endanger his life. These are the five. Achal v'yomad, a person should not immediately stand up to walk after he eats. He should rest a few seconds. We'll see exactly how much time later. Shasa v'yomad, he drinks. And then Yasha v'yomad, he wakes up in the morning and immediately starts walking. He's a little bit weak. He's, you know, his body has to get back to itself. He gives dam v'yomad after bloodletting. And Shimesh mitasa v'yomad, after he has relations with his wife, he should take life easy for a second. Amar Shmuel, Pursa de Dama Kol Talsin Yomin. Okay. Now, the next Gemara that we're going to have is going to calculate which days are not very good days for bloodletting. And furthermore, how frequently should a person allow himself to be subject to bloodletting? And it all depends on your age. There are different age brackets. Pursa de Dama Kol Talsin Yomin. Normally, a person should do bloodletting every 30 days. Ubein HaProkim Yomait. Ubein HaProkim means when he reaches an older state of what we call middle age. And I'll read to you the Beer here in Hebrew. He says the following. Just give me a second here, sorry. Beina haprakim kagon shigil shnas harboim. So again, up to the age of 40, he doesn't tell you from what age, he bloodlets once in 30 days. Beina haprakim, once he reaches the age of 40, you might. And Rashi explains that he should do it every 2 months, not every month. Ubein HaProkim, when he gets to the next stage in life, the twilight zone, that's he's already 60 years old. Yachzer v'yamayit, he should again diminish the frequency and he should postpone bloodletting for 3 months. V'yamar Shmuel Pursa didoma chad. Okay, he says the following, that there are certain days of the week that are appropriate for bloodletting and certain days have to be avoided. So, for example, Chag B'Shabsa on a Sunday, or alternatively, Arba B'Shabsa, or on Wednesday, Umayla B'Shabsa, or on Friday, those are good days, but not Sheni V'Chamishi Lo. Those are days to avoid bloodletting. Because Mondays and Thursdays are days of judgment, of din, down here, and also up in Shemayim. So you don't want to expose yourself to danger on those days of judgment. The Omar Mar, we have a statement in the name of one of the Chachomim anonymous, Mishi Yeshlo Zechus Avos, right? If someone has the protection of his ancestors, he has holy ancestors, his Yakiz Dam B'Sheni V'Chishi, he's allowed, and it's not considered dangerous, to bloodlet on Mondays and Thursdays. Shebezin shalmala v'shalmata shovim ki echad. That just like we sit, our courts are open on a Monday and a Thursday, so too up in Shemayim, they're open. So you need a special schus, which is called schus avos, and that will protect you. B'tlasa v'shabsa, my time alo. Now wait a second. He mentioned Sunday, and then he skipped to Wednesday. Because I understand why Monday is out, but why is Tuesday out? My time alo. Mishum de kaimale madim bizave. Okay, this has to do with astrology. And what we're talking about is Mars. And Mars has a certain prevalence, a certain power during even hours of the day on Tuesday. So Tuesday is Mars Day up in Shemayim. And during the even hours of the day, Mars is very powerful. Now, Mars is considered a red planet because it's a very dangerous kind of planet. So there are long footnotes here in the English translation. I'll let you read it on your own. It's all about astrology. It's all about the seven celestial bodies and their various respective astrological influences and impacts on the Earth. And it depends on rotation and where the positions they are in the sky. And we're talking about Mercury and Venus and Mars and Saturn and Jupiter. So if you want a quick blitzkrieg course in astrology, you will read on your free time these astrological considerations. My father, may rest in peace, was very opposed to astrology. But he sent me to different places, and unfortunately, for better or for worse, the places that I went to and the yeshivas that I learned in very often had a different approach towards astrology. And the Gemara itself, at the end of Masechta Shabbos, talks about the astrological powers. And you see from every Gemara, wherever you turn, that at least back in the day, they understood that these positions of the sun, the celestial spheres, have an influence, have an impact. Fine. Mazolus, right. So the Gemara says Ein Mazel B'Yisrael, but Rashi and Tosfos both say that Ein Mazel B'Yisrael means that Al Yidei Tefilu Ma'asim Tovim, if you have a special schus, you can override, so to speak, your Mazolus. But otherwise, Mazolus are very, very serious business. And some say that that's what birthday parties are all about, because the birthday party means that when you get back to that Mazel on which you were born, it has an influence. So what can I tell you? You know, this is a big issue. I'm not here to convince you one way or the other, but you can debate this from now until till Mars, if you know what I mean. And that's astrological calculations. What else? So we said that Tuesday is not a good day for bloodletting. Miley Shabsa Nami Kaima Bezave. So Gemara says, wait a minute. Mars has an influence also on Friday, not just on Tuesdays, and especially on the sixth hour, which again, as we said before, those are the even hours. And apparently, the Gemara says that it was quite commonplace that Erev Shabbos, they would do this bloodletting on a Friday. And the Gemara answers, came into Doshu Be'Ravim Shomer P'soyim Hashem. And I don't know if you're familiar with this concept. It's a very common concept in both in Shas and amongst the poskim. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichron Livracha, uses this Gemara that we just learned in his original tshuva about smoking. And keep in mind that he wrote that tshuva way, way before the Surgeon General's report on the various life-threatening impacts of smoking. And at his time, they were beginning to research that smoking is not healthy. To us, it's so posh, but back in the day, the Pnei Yoshua writes in his time that smoking is good for the digestive system, and therefore you're allowed to smoke on Yontif. Okay, whatever it is, I'm not going into the issue here, but Rav Moshe quotes this Gemara of Shomer P'soyim Hashem. If everybody does it, right, so somebody said, how do we sell cars? I mean, after all, people by the thousands die from car accidents. But, if you cross the street or if you drive carefully, so Shomer P'soyim Hashem. And the Gemara says that everybody, Doshu Be'Rabim, everybody was doing it, and that has some sort of a power up in Shomayim, and Shomer P'soyim Hashem. Omer Shmuel, Arba V'hu Arba. Any time the number four shows up, stay away from HaKazah Stam. So for example, if it's the fourth day of the week, stay away. Now, he qualifies this, and he says there's a possibility of a double four, like the Hu Arba, it's the fourth day of the month, okay? Or alternatively, Arba Shu Arbesar, or it's a Wednesday, which is the 14th day of the month, or alternatively, Arba, it's a Wednesday to Esrim V'Arba L'chod, it's the 24th day of the month. And also on a Wednesday, Arba D'Leka Arba Basrei, if you count from the end of the month, and there are 4 days left to the end of the month, Sakanta. All this has to be avoided. Any combination of a Wednesday with another number four has to be avoided. Rosh Chodesh, V'Sheni Lo. So the first day of the month and the second day of the month is Chulsha. Those are days which cause weakness, and you should avoid bloodletting. And Shlishi Lo, the third day of the month, is even more dangerous, and that's Sakona. That's already a life-threatening situation. Maile Yom Tava, Erev Yontif. Chulsha. Not a good time for bloodletting. It's a weak time. Constitution. Maili Yomadat Sarta, especially Erev Chagashvuos. That is a very dangerous time for bloodletting. Sakanta, it's mamish a sakana. V'goz rabbanu akuli mali yom tova mishum yoma tova datzeres. Because Erev Chag HaShavuos is so dangerous for bloodletting, therefore the rabbanu made a gzera, and they said, don't do any akozes dam on Erev Yontif, lest you come, heaven forbid, to do akozes dam and bloodletting on Erev Shavuos. The nafik be zeka ushmei tovoach. What is so dangerous about Erev Shavuos? There's a certain kind of a wind that's called Tavach. Tavach means it's a slaughtering wind. And that was the wind when HaKadosh Baruch Hu threatened to destroy the Jewish people if they didn't accept the Torah. And that was the wind that started blowing apparently on Erev Shavuos. The Elo Kibbol, the Yisrael Torah, had the Jews not accepted the Torah on the following day. Havitavachlu lebisrayu ledmayu. Then this very great, powerful, satanic demon in force called Nafik Bezika Shmei Tavach would have chas v'shalom chopped up the people of Israel. Omer Shmuel Achol Chita. If a person eats a bread that's made out of wheat, or any sort of concoction that has wheat in it, any sort of tavshil, is then make his dam, then after he does hakozes dam, so A, he ate wheat or some product of wheat, then he did bloodletting, is lo hikiz ela liosa chita. That bloodletting will not be effective and therapeutic for his body, for his entire body, as bloodletting should be. I guess if you suffer from high blood pressure. But rather, it's going to just help him digest something that's very heavy and very difficult to digest. So again, we'd have to ask the gastroenterologist what their position would be, but apparently wheat and anything made of wheat is very hard to digest. Maybe that's why people get tired after a heavy meal. And therefore, the hakoza after the meal will be necessary just to lighten the burden on his intestinal system. Vahani mili lirafua avolakuli mekil. In other words, if he's not interested in bloodletting for the purpose of general therapy for his entire body, then all he's interested is liokme and make it easier for him to digest his food, then mekil, then fine. This hakoza will be meaningful for that, but it's a limited kind of hakoza. Hamekiz dam shtioli alter. A person, after bloodletting, the first thing he has to do is drink, and then achila ad chatzi meal. He should wait the time it takes to walk a half a meal. Let's assume it's about 9 minutes time, and then he starts eating. Iboilehu. So the Gemara didn't understand exactly what Shmuel was saying. Shesiali alta miali avabosachi koshi. Is Shmuel implying that if he waits a little bit of time till he drinks, that could be dangerous? That could be, instead of being beneficial, it could be destructive, detrimental. Oh, dibolo koshi vilo mali. Or he meant to say that if you don't drink immediately after the bloodletting, then it's parva. It doesn't help. It doesn't make it worse. Teku. The Gemara didn't know the answer to that. Here in this case, I think if Eliyahu HaNavi is implied, let him give us the final answer. Ibailahu, the same exact suffix is Achilad Chatzimil Hu de Kamaili. When Shmuel says he should wait a Chatzimil until he eats some solid food after bloodletting, does that mean that only if he waits that time, Achila is helpful? If he didn't wait that time, then the Achila is just meaningless, it's neutral. Habasar Hachi. Could it be that if he eats immediately after the bloodletting, without waiting that would be detrimental, and if he postpones his eating till after the chatzi meal, that could be detrimental. Oh, Dilma, or perhaps lo koshi v'lo mali. In other words, if you want the real success of eating after bloodletting and the healthy kind of therapeutic effect, then you have to do it after chatzi meal. But if you did it earlier or later, Nishkefelach, it's neutral. We don't know. Machriz Rav. Rav used to declare, he made a proclamation. And all these proclamations of Rav are to indicate what kind of foods you should not pay for, meaning it's not worth it for you to spend the money because it's not healthy. Mea kari bizuze. If they want to sell you 100 gourds, don't even buy it for a zuz, even though it's they want to sell to you at a higher price, and now they're giving you the slash or some sort of sale. It doesn't pay to buy it because these gourds are not healthy. Now, I don't know which gourds he has in mind. I mean, in our context, I think a dalat, is considered healthy. Then he says, Mea reshe, let's say they have the head of the animal, and they're selling you 100 for a slash price, bizuza. Don't even pay a zuz for it, or a maximum of zuz, because it's not worth your while. It's not healthy. Mea sfame, velo klum. The lips of the animal, if they sell you that, I don't know if there's such a thing on the market called animal lips, he says, don't even pay a fraction of a zuz. It's not worth it. Rav Yosef says, now in the light of this statement of Rav, I begin to understand a certain phrase, an idiomatic phrase that I didn't understand. Ki avina be Rav Huna, when we were studying in Rav Huna's base medrash, he was the great Rosh Yeshiva at that time. Yoma de mefagre be Rabbanan, there was a day in which the students were very laid back about their learning. Amri, and they used to use a very idiomatic phrase, they used to say, idna yoma de sfamehu. Today is like the day of the lips. I never understood what they had in mind. Now I understand. They meant the lips of an animal, which if you buy them to eat them, it's worthless. So that day of learning was a lost day. The koshen is the tabor, right, in terms of what you do in pregnancy during Shabbos, and one of them is that we tie up the umbilical cord, and Rabbi Yossi says that we cut the umbilical cord. Tana Rabbanan Koshrin Tabor, according to Tanakama, in order to avoid any sakana as far as the vlad, the fetus, is concerned, we have to tie up the cord. And Rabbi Yossi Omer Avchotchim, we should even cut the umbilical cord. And if we don't do so, that might be dangerous. The Brisa continues. V'tomnim ashilya k'desha yicham avlad. We should envelop the placenta so that the newborn will be warm. And enveloping the placenta warms the newborn through the means which was known in that time. It's a skula. The Mishnah Berurah says it's not scientific. We don't understand how it works. But anyway, we want to envelop the placenta, and that's going to warm up the newborn baby. Again, even though the placenta is separated from the body of the newborn, but it's a skula. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Benos Melachim, those who are wealthy, the daughters of the kings, Tomnos Bisfolim Shel Shemen. They would take the placenta after birth and they would soak it in bowls of oil. Very expensive business. Because obviously you're going to throw out that oil afterwards. Benos Ashirim, those who weren't coming from royalty, but they were wealthy, then Bisfogim Shel Tzemer. They would envelop the placenta in wads of combed wool. And Benos Haniyim, but the poor women, then Bimochin, they used to use different kinds of cloths and cotton and rags and so forth and so on. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rav Avo, Omar Rav, Halachik Rav Yossi, again, probably exercising the principle of Suffolk Nefashis Lahakia, we're not going to take any chances, and on Shabbos we're going to cut the umbilical cord. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rav, Baruch Omar Rav, Modim Chachom Rav Yossi B'Tavar Shel Shnei Tinoko Shechotchim. There is a situation, a scenario in which even the Chachom agree that we have to cut the umbilical cord, and that's the case of twins. If twins are born, we must cut the umbilical cord, even according to the Chachom in my timer. And why is that? The menatchei adodi, because they're sort of pulling at each other, and that could dislodge the cord, the umbilical cord. It might get around the neck, and it could be very, very dangerous. The Omar, a third comment. Rav Nachman, Omar Rav, Baravu, Omar Rav, Kol HaOmer V'Parshas Tochacha Osim L'Chaya B'Shabbos. So there's an entire parsha in Yechezkel of the Tochacha, and whatever it says in the Tochacha, terrible things that the Navi predicts will happen if we don't do tshuva, all those things have to be avoided with regard to a yoledes, and we have to do everything that we can to avoid those kinds of things. Shenemar. And now we go through an entire pasuk in Sefer Yechezkel. Okay, God is rebuking the people of Israel because they're ingrates, and he compares the Knesset Yisrael to an abandoned newborn child, a girl who's left lying filthy and neglected in the fields. And this is all symbolic of the infant nation of Israel, enslaved in Egypt. And God passes by, raises this young girl who was neglected to womanhood, and he vows to take her as his wife, meaning that Hashem will take us as his nation. And after he has beautified her and adorned her, she's disloyal to him and strays after another man. So this pasuk that we're about to learn depicts the newborn in the parable who's lying in a neglected state. Shenemar, number one. We go through the beginning of the pasuk. Umi modal atech. Okay, mi modal atech. This is a reference to Yom Huledes. And this is the birth process itself. Mikan shebialdim es havlad b'Shabbos, that we will deliver the baby on Shabbos. Then the pasuk says, "V'yom who led us." Afterwards, it says, "Lo karas sharech," which means that the umbilical cord was not cut. That's another neglect, and it cannot be neglected. We have to cut the umbilical cord. Ubimayim lo rachatz lemishi, and you weren't washed with water to smooth the skin, and this teaches us that we have to wash the baby mikan shirochtzim avlad b'Shabbos, and v'hamleach lo humlacht, you weren't swaddled at all. Okay, he says in the Hebrew translation, says kedei lahakshos ulechazek es habasar. Okay, this process of swaddling the newborn baby is necessary to strengthen the skin. And it says, mikan shebialdim in the vlad b'Shabbos, is mikan shechotchim atabor b'Shabbos, mikan sherochtzim havlad b'Shabbos. We have to wash the baby to smooth its skin on Shabbos, and then it says, "Not you salted." We have to salt a newborn on Shabbos, and what does that mean to salt a newborn on Shabbos? We apply salt to the skin of the baby in order to harden the skin. Alternatively, he says that salting refers to application of actual salt, not to the application of salt, but rather to a powder that was made of ground myrtle and the like. And all this is to soften the skin of the baby. And then finally, v'achtel lo chutolt, and you were not swaddled at all. Mikan shemelafefin avlad b'Shabbos, we swaddle the newborn on Shabbos. So first we warm water in order to bathe the baby in warm water, which is usually prohibited midrabbanan to bathe the entire body with warm water, but for the sake of the newborn baby, we will certainly permit washing the entire baby with water that was heated before Shabbos. And if we fail to bathe the newborn in warm water, that could be dangerous to the life of the baby. And furthermore, we swaddle the baby in order to force the bones and joints that were bent or dislodged during delivery back into place. And this is permissible on Shabbos. Hadron Alecha, Perek Mefanim, and Emirsa Shembli Neder. Tomorrow we start Perek Rabbi Eliezer de Mila, a Perek which deals again with violations of the Shabbos for the sake of the Bris Mila in cases where the eighth day of the child's birth is on Shabbos. And with that, I will thank you and bid you a great day.
The word kever, meaning the womb, right. It's such a strange term.
Right. I'll tell you what it is. Chazal have an interest, philosophically, in paralleling birth and death That sounds counterintuitive. Why? Because Chazal wants to emphasize that death is actually the first stage towards birth, which is called Tchiyas HaMeisin. So any opportunity Chazal get to make an equation between the two, and, you know, as you say, it's very strange. You're talking about a person dies, they put his body into a kever, and they bury it, they inter the dead. And now you're telling me that a woman is giving birth, and the entire process is taking the baby out of a kever, out of its burial place. But the answer is because actually taking the dead out of its burial place is a process of rebirth. And that's why we're so careful. The halacha in Jewish law and Jewish ethics emphasizes burial. You know, what happened in the Shoah was so tragic because so many people were cremated, you know, and so forth in the crematorium. And basically, when we bury the dead, we're making a statement that this is just a stage. And right now, the ground is sort of holding on to the body. It's like a safe deposit box.
Yeah.
And the body will come out of that safe deposit box, just like a baby is born from its womb.
I remember reading in Rabbi Maurice Lamb's book, Death and Mourning, there's a essay, it's not a midrash, but some story, maybe from a century or so ago, about two babies, twins in a womb.
Right. That's a mashal of the Chofetz Chaim, a famous mashal.
Oh, yeah.
When the first one thinks the other one died, you know. Meanwhile, it's going into a more glorious existence.
Right.
Okay, have a great